outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, welcome to this edition of the God Journey. I'm Wayne Jacobson, and in deep sorrow this week since the Green Bay Packers got slaughtered on Sunday by the San Francisco 49ers, my son's team. So there's probably no worse team to lose to except the Dallas, probably, or the Vikings.
Oh, wow.
Wow, you just jumped right in there. With me today is Arnita Taylor from Dallas, Texas. Hi, Arnita.
Hi, Wayne. You know, the jab about the Dallas Cowboys is just unnecessary. We should not start a podcast off.
Hey, you got our old coach. You got our old coach. You guys should be thrilled.
Well, you know. Yeah. But it was just a dig, man.
No,
I mean, support you yesterday when Bob tried to offer you condolences about the Green Bay Packers. Was I not the one on your side? Remember?
Hey, I wasn't taking a shot at Dallas. I wasn't taking a shot. It was just saying, you know, that's the other team I'd hate to lose to.
But, I'm glad to know that.
I'm glad football is just football, and there's only one more game to be played, so I can move on with the rest of my life now. So,
okay.
Just got off the phone with people in Europe, so we're planning on heading to Europe this summer. Sarah and I are going to be there for a little anniversary trip, and then looks like we're going to put together a gathering of the saints in Europe, in Sweden. If you're over there in Europe or want to come and come join us, it'll be like June 3 through 10. Up in the northern reaches of Sweden above Stockholm, and we're looking to bring people together from all over Europe and have a week to just enjoy Jesus together and enjoy the countryside. Great fun for those that are there. And in 2 weeks from now, I'll be in Richmond, Virginia, so going out to spend some time with some folks there too. So, and after that, Oklahoma. So there's my upcoming travel schedule for those that want to jump into something like that. But anyway, Arnita, now you've been a published author for 3 months. How's it feeling?
You know, it's really cool. I mean, I'm very grateful to you for inviting me to be part of the project. It's been neat. The best part of it so far has been the number of people that I've been able to meet who want to talk about stuff from the book.
Good.
And I love that because I'm way more of a face-to-face kind of person when you talk about these things. You just can't do a lot of this discussion in a text form. It just adds to more conflict. So I'm loving meeting with people one-on-one, coffee cup to coffee cup. Instant message to instant message, and just talking through some of the concepts in the book or some things that they've realized that they want to do differently or just come to understand as a result of our book. So it's really, really fulfilling for me.
Yeah, research is showing right now that people in America are just flat sick and tired of talking politics and talking conflict and talking polarization and talking. Even my dad, who 95 years, almost 95, read the book, loved it. He turned to me and said, "You'll never sell this book." And I went, "What?" He said, "People aren't going to pay for this, man. People are just tired of this talk." And I said, "Well, you may be right. That's what we were told in the beginning. But I'm excited by people who are excited. Occasionally, when I mention it on the podcast, I get slapped back with, your podcast just turned into an infomercial for a language of healing. But yeah, I'm not... I'm like you. I'm really enjoying the conversations it stimulates and the people we're getting to talk to about various aspects of this. And that's what blesses me a lot because, and getting people to kind of begin to think differently. And it's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on again, because I noticed how much differently I'm beginning to think and how much you ruined me.
I just wrecked you, huh?
You have in so many ways.
We haven't known each other that long enough for me to really wreck you. So.
But I'll tell you what I mean. I was watching Star Wars with my dad. The new one came out Christmas time. We were up with my dad, and he doesn't go to movies much. He's an hour away from the nearest theater. So we drove him down the mountain and went and saw Star Wars with him, Sarah and I, and enjoyed the movie. And I just was noticing how much diversity was on the screen by the various characters portrayed in the thing. And it reminded me back in the early day, 1975, when the first Star Wars aired, and there was a big brouhaha about there were no people of color. Any of the first Star Wars couple of movies till Lando Calrissian finally got put on the second or third movie, I think third movie. And I remember just as I was watching it unfold, and here's where I tell you, you messed me up. I don't normally sit there and think about all those kinds of aspects, but I do now.
I
do think about
grateful.
Yeah, and I remember when the conflict, and here's how I think about it differently. I remember when the conflict first happened, it was like, oh, come on, it's just a movie, and we're just actors, and they just got hired, and they're just doing a movie, and, you know, you can't just spread the rainbow around every time you do something. I remember that, to now this time watching it going, man, I wonder what a young child of color, black child, brown child, whatever, would have watched that movie going, hey, I'm not in here.
Yeah,
and I, sure. And that's a different perspective for me, to wow. be able to not just think about what I would think about it, but thinking about what someone else unlike me would be thinking at the same time. And I don't know that I know, because, you know, I don't think you represent all black people like I don't represent right. all white people. And
sure.
I can't even imagine. But I shared this with you when I asked you to be on the podcast initially. Sarah, a few years ago, now almost a decade ago, went through just a major transformation in her life. And in the course of that, I got into a deeper layer of the ways Sarah thinks coming out of some of our conversations together. And now we'll be in conversations, or I'll say something to her and I'll stop and say, hold it. You just heard that this way, didn't you? Which is not the way I said it, not the way I meant it. But now it's like there's a different gear where I recognize, ooh, you know, you're hearing that in a more painful stab than I intended. Now, how can I word it in a way that gets me back? And it's been amazing to me what it has changed in the last 10 years of being able to hear things, even comments made to Sarah by other people. And I'll think, I think I know how she's hearing that. And it may not even be what the person intends, but it scratches a scar in her life that causes her to be in a painful place with it. And now we talk about it and she'll look at me and she'll go, yeah, that's what I was thinking. And
wow.
Yeah. And so what I've enjoyed about this, even though now I listened to 1619, the podcast about slavery in America and the formation of America and how much, and Sarah and I listened to it this summer together, and I listened this winter while we were up at my dad's on our walks, we would listen to 1619. And it wasn't just like normal, a white guy looking back going, ooh, that's sad. But it was like, what if I'd been one of those families?
Yeah.
What if, and you know, and I think my relationship with you has changed that.
Oh, well, I'm honored that our relationship has brought that into your life. But, you know, isn't that the best type of understanding, though, when you can put yourself literally in the shoes of people who are different? I think that's what the best understanding and the best empathy brings into a relationship. So we've all been shaped by different experiences and personalities and filters, but to understand a little bit, that they may not be receiving it the way I am, and to be able to ask questions or clarify or rephrase some things to another person certainly shows how much you care, and certainly says you're devoted to making that relationship better. So I love that.
And that's the conversation I think we failed to have as a culture. We're coming up on February again, Black History Month, I think, as it's been called. And I think about how people in my community have regarded that for years, almost with here we go again. We got to celebrate all the black achievements and like we don't have enough equal rights in our culture. And there's that almost resentment that we're doing it. At the same time, there's a need for that to instill pride in children of black kids and, you know, whatever, to realize the significance they hold in the culture as well. But I just have thought, how have we so miscommunicated as a culture that we're each absorbing these things based on what our culture needs, not necessarily processing it by what the other culture will be benefited by or how it's going to help them.
Sure. I think that's a very true statement. You know, in regard to the Black History Month thing, what I find is, you know, it's interesting that what you say about your community, like it's yeah, wah, 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 yeah, 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 I know that. I find that most people don't know a lot of facts about Black history and Black people in America and the positive contributions that we've had outside of the capitalism of slavery. So I find that it's very relevant. And my friends often, I get messages going, thank you, I've never heard this before in my life. So I'm hoping that some things in that month changes the narrative of all people about Americans and African Americans, Black Americans and their contributions. So it's kind of funny that it's so apropos and kind of mundane for your community, where I live, I find the exact opposite. It's kind of like, yeah, I didn't know this. Where has this been? Where has this been in the narrative of the country?
Yeah, I agree that people think they know who don't know. I would agree with you. Most of them don't recognize those contributions.
Sure.
But like the whole Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter thing, it's so easy to show. Well, it's just humanity. Let's just celebrate humanity. And when you're the majority club, that's easy to default to and not realize how important it is that people who are left out of human achievement and needs to be specifically emphasized in other areas. I think we would have a lot to learn from that. I'm not sure what we've done has communicated the best to the people who most need to hear it. That's what I want to say.
Well, I think you said that very well. I think you said that very well, and I think I would agree with that. You know, almost just like our book, Wayne, we know it's not for everybody.
For sure.
Just like, you know, learning about Black history is not going to be for everybody. But at some point, the people who it's not for, just be quiet. That's my only thing. Just be quiet and let other people learn and glean and do things differently, even though it's not something you want to do. So that's kind of my two cents there. I think it's great. I celebrate African-American history every month because I'm an African-American, and I'm always interested in great things that people are doing in America.
And I know you celebrate the culture in your home. I know there's just artwork and things all over the place.
Yes. And you know, what's very important to me, I moved to Dallas-Fort Worth from the Atlanta area. And actually, probably coming out of Middle Tennessee, I went to Atlanta because I wanted more of a Black experience. I did, a positive, progressive, proactive Black experience. And so when we had to move to Dallas-Fort Worth, I was literally devastated. I did not want to come, kicking and screaming, didn't want to come. And so I knew that I was the mom of two young African-American children, men, who didn't live in an predominantly African-American city. And so I made sure that every day when they came home, they understood that they came from African people, that we came from people who were scientists and engineers and physicians and lawyers and doctors that happened to come to our country and be enslaved, but that's not how they were in their native country. And so I made sure that they had an element of identity and positive association with our Blackness. And so you're right. When you come in my house, I often tell people it's not a fair first Black person's house to come in because you walk into about 100 African masks.
So yes, you do. Right. Everywhere.
Yeah.
And they stick out from the wall, so you bump them sometimes with your shoulder.
They
and
do.
Like, oh,
they
my
do.
Goodness.
They get knocked down and put back up, and we just keep it moving. So.
But to me, there's a real value of community that comes when we begin to at least at some measure look through the world through someone else's eyes.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it's easy to know how we process things and how we may get tired of hearing this problem or that situation and don't realize that there are people we may get tired of hearing about it. Here are people who live in it every day.
Every day.
And every day. One of the points made, I think you made it in the book that I thought was really profound, is that as a white person, you can navigate culture without ever necessarily coming in contact with or needing help from someone who's different than you. But
sure.
You can't, as a Black person, navigate this culture without interacting with white people and white culture and needing to be a part of that, needing to be included with those things. And that to me is a big difference when you see it that way, because I think most people from where I grew up, I won't say all white people, I'd say most people I grew up, the idea that, oh, yeah, slavery was horrible and we dealt with that 100 years ago and now we have equal rights and we're having a better opportunity for everybody. So everybody's got the same chance. And that's what they want to believe, because then you don't have to wrestle with the problem and try to fix anything or change anything or be part of a solution. You can just, well, we've already done that. It's over. And
sure.
I just saw Just Mercy. Sarah and I went and saw Just Mercy, which is a story of Bryan Stevenson's life and how he's gone from a Harvard-educated lawyer to the South to help get people off death row who were wrongly convicted and headed for capital punishment, who actually were wrongly convicted because we just need someone to put in jail for the crime to keep the community. So we just pick somebody.
We just pick somebody.
They've had 140 already on death row that they've already proved their innocence and able to get them off death row. And then you say, well, you know, it didn't. And this is, I think, again, particularly if you live outside the South, you're not as attuned to. It didn't just end at slavery. It's continued through lynching. It's continued through law enforcement that are wrongly convicting black men. And it's a whole persona in the culture that still carries on to this day. That's what the whole, I think, Black Lives Matter thing was about. We're trying to say, hey, we're not done here. There's lots of problems still. Help us. Would you please help us? And right. It's easy if that's not your problem, just going, okay, well, here we go again. And that's, I think, why the white culture tried to change it back to All Lives Matter instead of going, you know what? This is so important that we get this right. And it's been way too long in coming. And that's what these things, whether it's 1619, and I read some stuff on that said it was biased in this way or that way. And so I know a lot of people won't even listen to it because they think it's already biased negatively. Or Just Mercy, and how it is that we don't really, as a culture yet, get the idea that we're not seeing society the same way, and it's not treating us the same way.
One of my biggest concerns with all, and I love the 1619 Project. I think it's great. I do think some of that awareness will change some of the narrative in America. But what people need to understand, as a scientist, there's going to be bias in everything. That doesn't mean we throw everything out.
Exactly.
It just means that we understand that there's bias in everything. What I find is people normally reject things sorely when the bias doesn't align up with their way. But what we have to look at is the systemic and residual things that have come down through our country as a result of that. Some of what Mr. Stevenson is dealing with is the systemic fallout of the institution of slavery in America. And people act like, it just happened a long time ago and there's no repercussions. The only issue with that is I've been in some spiritual environments where people will go, no, you know, the sins of the fathers go back to the third and the fifth generation, and those things come down the lineage and we have to deal with them. It's the same thing with the institution of slavery in America. That's not different. I post sometimes in our group, a Language of Healing group, how things just happened about 50, 60 years ago. Because there's some people who just think, oh, no, we've always been together and it's always been peachy keen. Just the other day, someone sent me a copy from a probably pretty old history books that talked about how happy all the slaves were. That's not true. That's not indicative of all of our history. So I just don't think we can ever heal if we can't have candid conversations where we are at least listening instead of disregarding everything as extreme bias. I love that we are able to have that. Wayne, you and I talk about a lot of things.
We do. We talk about all kinds of things.
We talk about all kinds of things. And so I'm blessed to have that relationship with you and vice versa. And so I want that for more people.
I do too, which is why I wanted to do a podcast on something like this. We've talked about race on previous podcasts, and I hope we will do in the future, because I do think as much as the white community would like to feel like it's all over, I think it's important that we keep putting this in front of us, saying it's not done. And Brian Stevenson does a great job, this hero from Just Mercy, of showing how, and this was in the documentary HBO did over the summer, at least HBO aired it, how slavery morphed into lynching and lynching into improper incarceration of black youth, that these are really morphs of the same reality. It's not like this ended and now, there were some bad people left that did these things. Lynching and now incarceration, that's systemic in a certain part of our culture. And it has to do not with people who deserve it, but with a culture that is still wanting to keep the black presence down.
Sure.
And if we don't own it, we'll never be able to fix it.
And, you know, it's funny that you would bring that up, because I think I sent you a meme the other day. It was just Martin Luther King's birthday on Monday. And it's so funny because I watched so many people post so many of his great quotes and all of the greatness that he brought to our country. But I thought, you know what? And if you really, you probably really wouldn't like Martin Luther King today if you have a problem with hashtag Black Lives Matter. He was the first part of Black Lives Matter, literally. His whole legacy was about fighting racial inequality and inequity in African-American people in America, which is what the Black Lives Matter is. But I thought if you really have a problem with Black Lives Matter, you probably shouldn't post about MLK, because he would probably be kneeling with Colin because he kneeled first. So it's just funny how people disregard, you know, kind of separate those two. Whereas an African American, I don't separate those two. I see them as being extension of each other, just like Mr. C. Stevenson sees the unjust incarceration being an extension of slavery as well. Kind of an interesting point that you would bring that up, because I started thinking, well, you probably wouldn't like Martin Luther King right now because he'd be kneeling.
Wasn't that something interesting Jesus said about the prophets? He said, you honor the prophets your fathers killed. In other words, if a prophetic voice is speaking to an older generation, then I'm okay with them saying those words. But if Martin Luther King were saying those same words to us today,
now?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why you get to honor the past, even as you ignore the past. You might take a truth or two from it. And I think things Martin Luther King wrote, particularly from the Birmingham jail and other things he spoke, it wasn't just the I Have a Dream speech. There's so much that he pointed out about people who would say things in private that they wouldn't advance publicly in the white community to help the black person. And I just think, gosh, if he were saying that today, he would be as offensive today as he was then.
Absolutely.
Because we don't mind him saying that to our ancestors. Just don't be talking to me that way, because I'm not that way. I am unbiased and I'm fair, and I look out for equal opportunity for everybody. And yet systemically, and this has come up in a number of the discussions we've done about a language of healing with groups, systemically, it runs so deep that a book won't change it. You know, we don't have the power to change it, even through politics. It's got to bubble up from the bottom, where people begin to think differently about other people.
About people who are different than them. Like, in the point of contact moment, you've got to think differently. It's funny that you would say that. I was just in a meeting today, a few hours ago, and it was a meeting, probably about 50, 60 people. And at the end of the meeting, several of the women who were African American, we kind of got together and got everybody's information. It was a really cool group. I had been invited there, and so it was my first time meeting everyone. And then one person came up and said, you know, you guys are really congregating. And I thought, wow, there are probably six women in this circle, but there's like 46 white women over there that you didn't say anything to.
Hmm.
And I thought, well, what is that dynamic? This happens all the time. The opportunity to be a healing force happens all the time. It's moment to moment, time to time. Now, I don't know that they went over to all 46 other of the white women and said, hey, y'all don't congregate, but we just look differently. So it was easy to come to us and say, hey, y'all need to kind of blossom out and go meet some other people. Well, say that to everybody.
Yeah, exactly right.
Say that to everybody. It can be that subtle. It can be that
It can, but I notice how simply it happens. Even oftentimes when I'm simple. Just traveling and hanging out with groups of people I've never met before, and people come into a room, and almost automatically people end up like the men over on this side of the room talking about stuff, uh-huh. and the women over on that side of the room talking about their stuff. And it's sad how easily we self-segregate on so many lines. And I think one of the things that I treasure from our working on the book together, and what the book tries to say, is make a conscious effort in every group you're in to move beyond your kind, whatever your kind is.
Whatever your kind is.
Yeah, move beyond it. Meet other people. Find out. Yeah, move what they care about, what they heard about, what they like, what they enjoy, and mix it up. Because I notice that happens too racially in places, or Hispanic people end up hanging together in a group because they just, and I watched that at a dinner I went to recently over a tragedy that happened in our community. And you could look at the tables where people just kind of came in ones and twos, but sat down in tables, and they pretty much sat with people who were like them. And so that's normal.
That's very normal.
And it doesn't have to have a bad agenda to it. But if you're a person that just says, you know what, I'm going to move against that. Like if I'm doing a retreat somewhere, I don't walk into the building. If I'm doing two, and I don't do this very often, but if I'm doing two or three meetings in the same building, I don't walk in there every time and sit the same place I sat before. I consciously sit somewhere else in the room. So I talk to different people. Yeah. And I hope this kind of stuff, I hope as people hear this, there's an excitement to say, wow, I want to do some of this. I want to try to hang out with people that are not normally, and don't draw attention to the difference, just meet them as people.
Absolutely. Just meet them as people. That's been one of the great parts about this book. Like this Sunday coming up, I have a meeting with a lady who said, like, I've been wanting to sit down and talk to someone about some of the things in your book. And I'm thinking, I've known her a long time. She's been very encouraging. She's asked me to write a book for years on something else. Hmm. But I'm going to sit down and talk to her about a racial issue in her family. Wow. That's amazing.
It is.
So many more things. I had another person contact me today and say, you know, I went into a discussion last night. It was going to be a hard discussion, but I kind of thought about how I wasn't seeing it the other person's way first. And I have to tell you, the outcome was amazing. So thank you guys for writing the book, because actually it's much better when you do it than even reading
yeah,
it.
Yeah, true.
And I thought, oh, you know, that's the win. It's, you know, I don't think people who socially select are bad people. I just think people who want to usher in a higher level of peace and camaraderie in our world and in our country will be those people who have the courage and the boldness to go towards something that's different. And, you know, it may be a thing of numbers. Okay. You may go toward some person and feel rejected, but, you know, we encourage you to keep going toward people who are different. Someone will receive you. And that's where the blessing really comes
in. It really is. And particularly for people of faith, where, you know, revelation, one of the high points at the end of the age is people from every tribe and tongue and people and nation yes. come and gather before God. So we would have the bias biblically of we're all one community, one people, and our diversity makes that a more beautiful symphony than if we're all playing the same note, right? And yet the Absolutely. Church has almost always been on the wrong side of bringing people together across cultural lines.
You know, you would have a lot more to add to that than I do. I just have found, this is not something that I've researched, the church has, in general, maybe has a little bit more of an issue with the term social justice. Even though I think Jesus had an intensive social justice leg to his ministry, is the way he taught, you know, he dealt with women and other people who were being oppressed in the community in the biblical times. But I think the word social justice may just be a challenge for the church. I don't think they know how to navigate that well. So a lot of people just don't. Or either you'll have churches that are extremely social justice driven, and they kind of are few and far between. So what do you think?
Yeah, back in the day, it was a different term they used for that. The social gospel was one versus people who want to save people's souls and people who want to feed the hungry. And that became really two different communities, two different sets of priorities. And I know today, even in more conservative groups, social justice is used as a pejorative. They talk about social justice warriors right. in a mocking way, not, yeah. and then you never get to actually, and that's the power of words and how we deal with it. We always change the words so that we don't have to talk about the issue behind them. But when you mock social justice, yes, there are extremists who want to do things in society that are never going to happen. And, you know, so that's how they tag the label on social justice warriors to them. So, yeah, you're right. I think in the conservative community, it's been, oh, we care about saving people's souls. We don't care about, you know, the mechanisms of power in the world until we want the mechanisms of power. And then we care. And then it's, as I hear from so many in that conservative community now, if you're a white conservative Christian in America, you're the most persecuted person in America. That's what they actually believe. It's what they've been told. And I know when someone like you hears that, it's like, what? How blind do you have to be to think as a white Christian, you are the most persecuted person in the U.S.? But there's a lot of people who believe that now because of what's going on in the LGBT community and LGBT rights and how that's seeming to undermine religious expression. And so, yeah, there's a lot of Christians that feel persecuted. I know the last time we talked about something having to do with the Black Lives Matter thing, man, I got an angry email from a guy who had been on a ship where so many people had been killed in Vietnam. And he thought even talking about it was a slight to servicemen and women in the country. And I was like, how many of those people died in Vietnam were not white?
This is not
about the military. Yeah.
No. And my father and my husband are both veterans. So it's just not about that.
It isn't, but people turn it into that so they can not have to deal with it. And then they feel dishonored by it. And I said, man, I don't know why honoring people who care about social justice dishonors people who died 40 years ago in a war in Vietnam. I don't, but to them, it's a very real connection.
And, you know, I asked my dad about it, and he said, you know what? As a military person, we fight. He said, we are in the military for people to have the choice, to have the privilege of choice. That's what we fight for. That's part of the freedom of America. It's just funny how that gets so twisted in the middle of, you know, again, different people seeing things different ways. And, you know, I'm okay with anybody being angry about it. They can be angry and deal with it on their own. It still doesn't denigrate, you know, anyone else's experience.
It does not. And I think what one of the things that we're encouraging people to do, and I think that I started this podcast with, has been so fun to me, is being able to get into a circumstance and try to see it through someone else's eyes. Don't just react the way you would react in that situation, given your perspective on everything. Put your head as best you can, and we can't do it obviously completely, but you can at least be, I wonder how they're seeing this. Like 16.
Yeah, just ask yourself the question.
Yeah, the 1619 podcast, one of them, I think it was the second or third one, was all about the economic contributions of enslaved people to the economy of the U.S. and how much it drove the economy, and then how threatened they were, like when slavery ended and black men wanted to own their own farms and now take their labor that they'd been doing and now do it for themselves. And how much the white resistance was against them owning their own land to be competitors to the people who used to enslave them. Now I think about listening to that as a white person, and I'm going, oh man, that's tragic. That's just tragic. That just shouldn't be. But when you think about, man, what is a black person here who listens to this? I'm telling you, it would be easy to think how much we contributed to the national well-being and how little reward we took off the table.
Yeah,
and I don't, sure. Man, I don't know how I would handle that. If I was a young black male listening to that, thinking, wow, we have been cheated. And you have. The fact is true.
And you know, I can't wait to, I started listening to a little bit of it, and it was hard for me to get through the first one. Because, you know, as an African-American, just talking about how we experience things, some of that stuff is very painful.
Oh, I can't imagine it wouldn't be, yeah.
You know, when I go see Just Mercy, when I do go see it, and I will go see it, I'm having to pray myself up on seeing it. But when I see it, I think about all of the millions of people who haven't been able to get out, or the people who have already died.
Exactly.
They really aren't guilty. And so for me, it takes my mind through a whole different pathway of thinking. One thing, I don't know if I said this earlier, there was someone's social media post, and they were like, yeah, you know, I didn't know all that stuff was happening in the 80s and the 90s. And I thought, wow.
Yep.
That's kind of a clueless person because it's still happening. So it's kind of painful to listen to that stuff. You have to really get your gut up, as I call it, to listen to it. And to be honest with you, I love how the Project 1619 is being narrated with some of the voices and stuff in it. But traditionally, you know, stories come down families orally. And that even goes back to biblical times. And it's funny how few stories have come down my family because they would have come out of a place of slavery. So I don't have a big oral narrative about things that happened in my family, probably because there was so much trauma in it.
Wow.
And they just chose not to repeat things. And so there's just big gaps of stuff that you don't know. But my great-grandma was a slave, and my grandma was a sharecropper who had a third-grade education, both of them. Mm. And so for me, it's a different way of looking at, wow, this is something that we will deal with for a while. But it does affect the way we see ourselves sometimes now.
Yeah, and when I start talking this way with some people, what I hear is, "Well, what do we do to fix it?" And I'm going, "I don't really have those answers." I mean, trying to fix it would be just huge. But maybe one little step is just start to see it from their perspective. Just start to kind of wrap your head around how it would feel if this was your history.
Exactly.
And I think most of us just. Again, we don't like painful things. Life's painful enough. Like no. I don't enjoy going to a movie like Just Mercy. I don't. I mean, I find it as painful that there are actual white law enforcement people who would just choose a black guy off the street so we can accuse him of it. It's even said in the movie, if you didn't do it, someone like you did it, so it doesn't matter. Okay. Yeah, and I just go, see, I hate believing that that person exists on the planet, but I know they do. I hate facing it. I hate looking at the inequities, even in my friend living as an undocumented or illegal, whatever term you want to use, alien in America, a friend I care about very deeply, a friend I feel like is being cheated every day. Would I rather not look at those things? I'd rather not look at them. But love puts you there. Love says, I'm going to look at it the way you're looking at it. And I'm going to try and wrap my head around it as the best I can. And I'm going to from there see what God might lead me to do. But to ignore it, to just put my head in the sand and say, no, these things, I don't want to talk about them. I think it makes me uncomfortable. Well, then nothing will ever change if we're worried about being uncomfortable.
Dismissing it adds to the polarization. It really does. It adds to the polarization in our relationships. And I'm like you, if we could just do this one person, situation, context at a time, that's a place to start. Of course, no one can undo the atrocity of slavery.
Yep.
They cannot. I can remember a few months ago when Harriet came out. I got so many phone calls, but I was like, well, what did you think slavery was? It's almost like people kind of saw that on the screen and was like, but I didn't know it was that way. Because they didn't know that. I believe that. They were being, I mean, some people are sobbing on the phone when they're talking to me, and I thought, wow.
What, they didn't see Roots? They haven't seen any of the other things that...
Perhaps
oh
not.
Oh, my gosh. No, that is amazing.
Not. Perhaps not. You know, Roots was a long time ago. So unless you go and kind of find it.
Right.
You won't...
But 12 Years a Slave, there have been a number of things that shows how absolutely atrocious this institution was and how much it was defended to the point of splitting the nation. We're going to defend our Southern way of life, which was...
Yeah.
We want the freedom to enslave people for our economic benefit. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And again, there's no good answer to say, oh, this is what we could do to fix that, whether it's reparation or anything else. Just put your heart around the reality and the pain of it and seek to understand it through someone else's eyes and then see what it is that God might lead you to do. You don't have to fix the whole thing.
But just be accountable to what you can do.
Yeah, and let people know you care. And that you own it, that you're not trying to run from it. You're not trying to minimize it. You're not trying to say, well, you know, it's really kind of old. It doesn't really matter today. The impact of that and the segregation of our society still has profound impact.
The byproducts are still very much
there.
The byproducts are still very, very much there. I had a lady call me a couple of days ago and it was great conversation. We ended up talking an hour instead of 15 minutes. And she said, you know, God has just been working with me and dealing with me on the concept of repentance. And she said, you know, I think that I'm supposed to do some type of representational repentance for what I'm learning that has happened with our African-American brothers and sisters in the country. And I thought, wow. I was like, you know, you and I are friends, and she looks very different than I. And I thought, you know, that's just so amazing that after you start reading our book, she wasn't through the book, but she thought, you know what? There are just some things that I want to deal with the people around me in the event that I've been offensive. And I just thought, wow, that's kind of what you're talking about. It's got to be a move on a heart.
It does. And when you look at someone and say, man, I'm really sorry for what you've been go through. Don't people know intuitively where that's coming from, the depth of a heart or just some kind of pro forma thing to say to make me feel less comfortable? But when it really comes from someone's heart, when somebody's really going, man, I'm really sorry for what you faced there. I'm really sorry for what you've gone through. That holds some incredible weight.
It does. It carries a lot of weight. I had another meeting with a lady Monday, and I actually posted a picture of it. Because it was our hands as we had coffee. And she just cried. And I said, you know, I am so sorry that you are crying so hard. There was kind of nothing you can do about that. But now we can go forward. And she's into putting different women in the room together and asked me to help her do that. And I thought, I think that in and of itself is a huge contribution toward fixing what's been so separate. Yeah.
That's great. Well, we're running out of time, Arnita. And one of these days you're going
to
one of these days you're going to call me and say, "Hey, Wayne, let's talk about this." Because every time I call you, it seems to be about race.
You know, I was telling somebody, I have a Wayne Jacobson I can talk to. I really have not had white men that I talked about race with.
Wow.
That's what people, I don't think people get that. I don't think people get that. When we sit down to write a book, this is not something I would have talked to white people about. Hmm. Not a white dude.
I've heard that.
Not a white dude. It's much of a gift to me as it is to you.
I have a lot of black friends and people I've been with, been in their homes, been all that. But we just talked around it. We've never just really sat down and had these kinds of conversations. I am now. People want to jump into it with me, which is great.
I love
me
that.
Me too.
I love that. And I'm getting the same response. I haven't gotten it from other white men just yet.
Because every time I see something or have some interaction, I'm going, I want to know what Arnita thinks. I want to pick her brain on this. But I said we'd have...
Pick my brain.
I said more than just race. There's so many great ways to pick your brain, lady. There's lots of stuff going on in your heart. So
true. That's true. I'm just trying to make sure that it comes out right.
But after you and I... Before you and I talked, I recorded a podcast with Tracy that'll air the week after this one airs. In which after we talked about the gift of sexuality, her and I, we got an email from a guy whose daughter is gay and had some wanted us to see through his eyes. And so Tracy and I try and do that. And this is valuable in so many ways. The compassion, you don't have to change your moral stands to look with compassion on people who are struggling with the backside of those things.
Absolutely.
And so we get a chance to do that too. And I hope that's what this inspires people. Just the next conversation you're in or the next event you're at or whatever, go, I wonder how they're viewing this and play with it. See what you learn and then talk to them, ask them if this, is this what you're thinking or what? Tell me what you're thinking and learn and grow. And that's how the world changes. So thank you, Arnita, for joining me again.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. And I'm going to go see that movie. I'm going to go see just
good. I haven't seen that Harriet one yet. I'm waiting for it on video, but we haven't got to it yet. So.
Okay. Yeah, it should be out soon. Yeah, go see Harriet.
I will.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.